because you're jumping back into the gap. All right, to coach, it's either sideline, two on the side, three on the side. That's off the second cut. Lead the country in offensive rebound.
Hey, coach, welcome to the Basketball Podcast. I'm your host, Chris Oliver. Let's share the game. Welcome to the Basketball Podcast. Excited today to have Dedrick Taylor with us. Dedrick is the head coach at Cal State Fullerton. And coach, first off, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me. Glad to be here and excited to have some conversation.
Well, I've had a few conversations with you over the last few years, and they've always been great conversations. So our coaches will get a lot out of the experience. And just to give a little context here to what we're going to talk about, you became head coach at Cal State Fullerton in 2013. And there were struggles initially. It wasn't a quick turnaround, fair to say?
Definitely. Very, very adequate.
And then you got the team. You went 11-9 wins in your first two seasons to 20 wins, a Big West tournament title, NCAA tournament berth in year five. And trip to the NCAA tournament was the first time since 2007-08 and only the third time in program history, which again is remarkable. So, and really, I say that to give context to this conversation topic, which is that everyone glorifies the quick turnaround as if it's normal. But the reality is most turnarounds, there's struggle. And you have to persevere, you have to stick with it, and you have to get support from the people around you. And can you talk to that a little bit about that process of turning around a program through some struggles?
Yeah, you know, it was really interesting to learn throughout the whole process. We came in here with a blueprint that we thought was almost a ready-made thing and had an immediate turnaround type of effect. That was obviously the end goal, but it didn't work out that way. We had to change our approach from a recruiting standpoint. Most importantly, just being able to recruit a certain type of kid, type of young man. When I got here, I thought, hey, if he's talented enough, bring him. I can coach him. And I quickly learned that that was not the case. Just by continuing to have talented young men, but we would go play lesser talented teams and we'd still come up short. And so I just begin to wonder, like, what's the difference between my team and those teams? And I quickly understood that winning takes a certain type of character, a certain type of discipline. And just because you're talented does not mean that you're going to have that type of character, that type of discipline, the things that are necessary to win games consistently. And so we had to make a shift with the type of young men that we were recruiting. And our staff was able to quickly make that adjustment. And we started recruiting a couple of high school kids. And we got really, really fortunate with a couple of local guys that have come in here and changed the culture and changed the character of our program, which has allowed us to have success. And it strictly deals with our recruiting, you know, and the support and the ability for the AD to stay with us and stick with us through our trials and tribulations. I mean, it was nothing short of remarkable, but, you know, in the struggle, you learn so much and you are tested so frequently with your beliefs and how you see things and how strongly you believe in those things. And all of those things were tested for not only myself, but for our staff and our program in general. And I think had it not been for the struggle, I don't think that we would be on this side of the fence in terms of a turnaround. And yes, it took a lot longer than maybe we anticipated. But again, nothing worth having comes easy. If it's worth having, you got to go through some things. And in order to appreciate the outcome that you desire, if you're able to just flip a coin and get it, I don't think the appreciation will be the same. And so we've endured those things. We've been through those things. And now I think we're reaping some of the benefits of our struggle and learning so much about what it takes and, you know, what's important to be a consistent winner.
Well, and coach, I mean, first of all, the maturity of a new coach to understand that, and instead of going for the quick fix, and which in obviously all coaches' world is talent over character.
Sure.
And the maturity to do that is remarkable. And I'm sure that's where a lot of first-year coaches struggle at all levels of basketball taking over programs, is that we fall in love with the talent. So What were some of the things that cued you into saying, listen, we've got to find character over talent? Was it just problems coaching players? Was it their lack of interest in changing? What were some of the things?
I think just overall looking at, you know, those plays that allow you to win or lose, like the games we were losing by 4 or 5 points, a possession here, a possession there, two possessions here. And it just boiled down to the discipline. and being able to understand in this circumstance, I cannot get off track. I cannot, as an individual player, I can't go do my own thing and create this hero ball sensation. Because if you do that, you might win once, you might win twice, but over the course of a season, you're not going to win the games that you are able to win because you're not disciplined enough to make the right play, to make the simple play. You'd rather go for the home run or try to play hero ball, and those games cost you. And so I think just learning that and getting our team and our players to understand that and get in those, recognize those moments when they're happening. And so what we termed them were championship time, championship rebounds, championship plays. And when we started to recognize as a staff that, okay, here are those moments, let's make our players aware of it by coining it championship time. We were after a championship, and so here we go. You know, simple things like being at the free throw line and the other team shooting and you miss a block out. And that team, not only do they get the rebound, but now they score. And so it stretches the game out and makes it, you know, makes it harder for you to win. And so just being able to allude to those things from a championship standpoint and setting the standard that, hey, we're in these moments and this is what we expect. We don't expect you to come down and, you know, pull up and shoot a three if that's not within the confines of what we're trying to do, just because you think this is going to win us. In fact, win the game. In fact, what it will do is it will hurt you because you take that shot, you miss it. Not only did you miss it, but now the other team has an opportunity to get a run out. More times than not, they're either going to convert or you got to foul them if it's during that stretch of the game. And so just being able to recognize those moments and understand them and then teach to them. And then something else I thought really, really significant for myself as a younger coach, I heard Jeremy Foley, who's a former AD at Florida, talk about this with a lot of those that he hired, and he hired Billy Donovan. He said when the coach becomes more aware of himself, then he becomes a better coach. And that just like hit me like a ton of bricks because I've gone through that metamorphosis. And not to say that I have all the answers, because I don't, but I'm just more aware of what I like, what I think wins, and what's significant to me. And so I can now promote it throughout the confines of our system as these are the pillars to winning. Understanding them, buying into them, and then executing them with consistency, that's what's going to allow us to win.
Well, it's great stuff. And those championship moments, let's go back to that first, because it's outstanding the way you phrase it and the way you talk about it. And let's get into even more specifics about that. What are some ways that you do recognize that with your players? Is it through film? Is it through just acknowledging it? Are those moments acknowledged in practice as well as games? That's become obviously a part of your culture. So what are some ways that that now has been ingrained with your players?
Well, you mentioned the struggle. And the struggle is getting your behind whooped, you know, in games that you know you have a good chance to win and you come out on the bottom side of that thing. And so recognizing those moments first and foremost throughout the course of a game, and they normally typically will happen towards the last 4 minute segment of the game if it's a close game or, you know, somewhere in the second half. And so being able to, as a staff, identify, hey, here's why we're losing. That was one of the most important parts of it is identifying, because it's not, you know, trying to run this specific play or execute this action. It's over the course of the game, particularly in the second half, there are possessions that you have to win those possessions. And we were losing those possessions. And we were losing those possessions because we weren't on the midline when on penetration, or we gave up an offensive rebound, or we gave up a transition basket and we, you know, we should not have. And so recognizing those things from our staff first and foremost was important, and identifying that those are things that are costing us winning, you know, opportunities to win. And then showing our team, making our team aware individually as players, their actions towards those moments. What did you do in these moments? And if you do something different, if you do what we expect, or if you do what we know you're capable of doing, we can expect this. But until you do those things, until you as an individual player recognize those things, it's hard for you to understand how significant they are in the grand scheme of winning. And so individually recognizing those things, and then collectively as a group on film, showing them from previous games. And I thought one of the things that really took us over the top was in practice, while we're playing or during different segments of practice, hey, this is a championship time in practice. We have to have special attention and red alert in these particular areas, and being able to identify those things. And as you know, when you start to say them and you start to mimic them, your team starts to pick up those same concepts. And our team, our players, began to understand them, and they began to call those things out before we would in the course of practice or during the game. You know, when you huddle at the free throw line, they begin to say to each other, hey, championship play. We got to make a championship play. Championship time. And so it became a theme amongst our group and our players. And so we could look at each other, whether it was staff to staff or player to staff or staff to player. Hey, championship time. Let's go. Literally during timeouts in games, we would write on the board, championship time. And that was all we would say. And our guys knew automatically, you know, it's a different part of the game and a different opportunity for us to start to close out, you know, games. And so what happens is we take those moments, you know, and we grow those moments. We grow from being alert for 2-3 possessions to 6 possessions to 8 possessions to now the last 4 minutes are championship times. The last 2 minutes of the first half, hey, it's championship time. And so being alert and being aware and then coining a phrase to be able to identify those times and then what has to happen during those times, I think is the thing that allowed us to move, you know, in the direction that we're heading now.
It's great stuff, and the players owning it. And then the other part that I want coaches to understand that you said, which is so important, is that you've connected it from practice to the game and back. So it's not this separate thing that just happens in the moments of the game. It happens in practice as well. And you work on it in practice in acknowledging those moments as well. That's awesome. Coach, one of the other things I read is that you decided to focus on first-year player recruitment rather than transfers. And I'm guessing, based on what you've said already, that comes back to the character component. Is it because you could identify character a little bit better, or is it because you could shape character a little bit better, or both?
I think both. I really think both. I think we've really, really become, you know, with our previous staff, obviously we had to make a change and we had two guys go move on to be head coaches. But I think with our staff, just identifying, okay, don't get seduced by the talent. Behind the talent, what else is there? Character. Character meaning, can we trust those guys to go to class when we're not around? Can we trust that they're going to do things the right way when nobody's looking, when nobody's there to hold them accountable? Are they going to be able to hold themselves accountable? And so, you know, I think that shift from being seduced by talent the first year or maybe even the first 2 years to substance behind the talent, that's something that we focused on and walked in. You know, if one of our staff came in and said, hey, we want to recruit this kid, they already knew. My first question was, what kind of kid is he? Who have you talked to define that? How do you know that? What have you done research-wise to come up with that conclusion? And so we started to have those kinds of conversations more than, you know, hey, he can get in and out of a ball screen. Once we determined that they were talented, the shift became, what can we learn about these kids? Who can we talk to? Who can we identify to find out, you know, what we're getting when those young men show up on campus? You know, as coaches, we get all crazy about, you know, how talented they are. And when they get here, we're going to do this, do that, and all from a talent perspective. But when they get here, we need to know, are they going to be able to handle their business in the dorms? When there's parties going on, are they going to know, hey, there's some stuff going on in here that I don't need to be a part of. They need to leave. And so being able to identify those things, and through the activity of those search, that search for information, we discovered things and started to key in on things that became important to us. Like, you know, working in the weight room, that's a huge part of our culture now. When we first got to campus, our baseball program is probably one of the most storied programs in the country, being in the postseason 27 times. And so from their success, I went to the weight room coach and I said, hey, who's the hardest working team in our program? Who's the hardest working team? And immediately it wasn't even close. He said, baseball, it's not even close. And so from that, I took, hey, we need to find out and figure out what baseball is doing in this weight room and their culture. What do they do? And they recruit to those things. And so we stole that from the baseball team. And now we kind of have a makeup, and we kind of call it Titan DNA. Does this kid possess Titan DNA? And amongst our staff, if you say that, they already know what that means. And so being able to identify those things, determine what they are, and then go out and seek them and attract them and now continue to cultivate them. I found that first year guys, if they have it, you can continue to grow it and cultivate it versus transfers. And I'm not opposed to that, especially with the two new guys that I hired. They live and die on transfers. And so we've been having some heated conversations and some discussions about why transfers are so important now versus trying to get a high school kid and grow them. And so we're going to fight to do both and fight to be good at both. And just based on who we are and where we are, you know, I feel like there's a plethora of players that are first year guys that they fit the bill and they fit the make and mold, and we're still going to be able to attract those guys. But I think we will turn the page a little bit and maybe get more involved with transfers because they are proven. You know what you're going to get. You don't have to wait or try to grow it. You already know. And if they're willing to buy into the culture that we already have that exists, then I think we have a perfect opportunity to marry both of those two concepts together.
Well, it's great because, again, you're at a different point in your program now as well in terms of the cultures in place that players can pass it down from generation to generation. So transfers would be, in theory, better off now than when you first got in there. And that's a part of the conversation as well. But, yeah. Coach, I got to say, the part that I love how you said this, because I have a huge problem in coaching, in coach speak, when coaches generalize, when they say things like, oh, we got to recruit character, we need character. But then when I ask them, it's like they don't know how to define it. They actually mean. And that's the part that I thought was outstanding that you said, is like when you ask an assistant or you ask someone, how do you actually know? What are the conversations you've had? What are the details that you picked up? And that's outstanding. So
Really, you know, and it's you know, we're trying to grow it and allow it to be a part of our DNA, so to speak, and our brand, so to speak. I mean, I'm in my office right now and I look to my left and on my board, it's the standard, the Titan standard. As a part of character, there's four things. Do they have good energy and effort? Do they play hard? Are they a willing teammate to play together, make the extra pass? Are they focused on themselves and being selfish versus selfless? And then do they understand execution? And then do they communicate? And those are things that we define character by. Like, we don't just say it. It's like, you know, you mentioned there's some substance behind it. And if they have those things, or we feel like they have two or three of those things and we can grow them to get all five, then we have a Titan player without question.
The other part, Coach, and I don't want to get into the politics of, you know, if we should give coaches more time than we do. Obviously, you and I probably feel that we do. We bond from coaches too early. So Speaking to that, what are some things that were coach-led on your part that could give advice to other coaches about managing the struggles in relation to your administration? Because I'm guessing that it wasn't them just saying, hey, just keep going. It was you also selling them on the fact that, look, maybe the record isn't what you want yet, but here's the things that are moving along. So what are some of those specific things that can help coaches maybe explain it to their administrations?
You know, I think you have to establish, again, it goes back to the self-awareness and what you believe in. When we first got here, and if you go back to our press conference 6 years ago, you know, I talked about character. I talked about defending, rebound, and run. That's what our program is built on. And so trying to identify those moments and trying to say we're getting better, even though the outcome is not where we like it to be, we're getting better in these specific areas and having those conversations where you initiate the conversation with your administrators. Don't allow them to come over and say, hey, what's going on? You be proactive and you go paint the picture that you want people to see. Don't give them the opportunity to paint their own picture because they don't have the brush. They don't understand what you're going through and how hard it is and how difficult it is dealing with some of the factors that they're not even aware of, you know, in terms of being able to go sit in a gym and watch hours upon hours upon hours of basketball and walk out of there and say, hey, I feel good about five guys for these three reasons. Now let's go figure out how we can go get two of them. They have no idea. All they see is the end product or the product that's out on the floor. So being able to continuously communicate what your vision is, what your desired effect and outcome is, I think is uber important to, first and foremost, tell yourself that as much and as often as you can. And then paint that picture with your administration as much and as often as you can. That same message with any of the stakeholders, whether they be on campus, whether they be boosters, they need to hear these things from you. And you've got to paint the picture as to why we're not quite there yet or why we are there and we're moving on to this. Perfect example is you know, we have some people that are invested in our program and being able to let them know, hey, we just hired our two guys. Here's who they are. before the rest of the public knew. They felt so good about that. They were so excited. I think we ended up having to do like 5 or 6 free, really good dinners because the guys were so excited. They wanted to meet them, but they wanted to continue to invest because they felt like they had a part in the picture painting. They understood it. They got to see the vision before everybody else was able to see it. And so giving them that information, I think, is very important nowadays because, you know, transparency has to be at the forefront of what you're trying to do. I mean, if people feel like that you're being transparent, they, I think, will give you a little more leeway to make some mistakes, a little more time to work through some things versus you keep everything close to the vest, you don't tell anybody anything, and now all of a sudden things aren't going in the right direction. Well, because you haven't communicated, nobody knows, and they only know the outcome that they're seeing. They don't even know the outcome that's desired. And so, you know, I think that's a very important part of growing a program in a day and age where if you're not good yesterday, you're already too late.
It's great. I mean, again, we tend to sometimes hide as humans when things aren't going well. But in reality, it should be the opposite is what you're saying, and that you should be clear and honest with your communication and open about what's happening so that people understand, again, the process and all the work that's going into it. And it's such a great moment. And I'm glad that you shared that with us in terms of those things. And it's led to you've nurtured assistant coaches. And again, at not a traditional school that might produce assistants moving on to head coaching jobs, right? And I'm guessing that all of this development has been part of the process, that your assistants have really been able to solidify their philosophy being around someone with you, like you, who's created this template for them. Has that been part of the success for guys like Danny Sprinkle that moved on?
I think so. I don't want to even begin to act like I could take any credit for those guys. You know, not only Danny Sprinkle, but John Smith moving on to Cal Poly San Luis Obispo. Like those guys are unbelievable coaches. They're more importantly, they're unbelievable men that sacrifice so much to come here and deliver our program where it is right now. The credit goes to them. And the ultimate reward is for them to be able to leave here, not moving to a higher level, so to speak, to be another assistant. They are running their own program. And so something that I stole from Herb Sendak is allowing coaches to coach, not just recruit, not just do office stuff, but get involved in every aspect of building a program, whether that's going across campus to meet with the provost, whether that's getting out on the floor and fully putting in a scout with some of your beliefs, some of the things that you want to do within the confines of our system, but getting up and standing up and producing opportunities for guys to grow and develop. I 100% believe in growth and development and allowing guys to get better. Like every single day I'm driven by, me personally, I'm driven by who and how can I help someone get better? Because selfishly, if they're getting better, I'm getting better. And in my quest to get better, I want to invest in other people. I want to invest in other things and allow them to grow and develop and give them all that I have. In turn, they're going to end up hopefully giving me all that they have, and together we can be better. And I think that's the metamorphosis that you've seen with Danny Sprinkle moving on to Montana State and John Smith moving on to Cal Poly San Luis Obispo, is they've come here and given us so much. And in turn, we've given them a platform to be able to kind of cut their teeth, so to speak. You know, they'll come in here and ask me, hey, what do you want to do about this? My immediate question is, and I get this from Herb Sendak, what do you want to do? What do you think's best? Is that the best option that you think? How do you know that? How did you come to that? What was your process that delivered you to those things? So don't just come in here and just say, hey, this is what I think. No, why did you think that? And so just having those kinds of conversations and trying to change the perspective to go from a broad-based front is what's most important versus, you know, more tunnel vision. Don't just sit here and just say, oh, I'm an assistant. There's an AD I heard speak some time ago. His name is Craig Littlepage. At the time, he was the AD at Virginia. And he said, if you want to be a head coach, then act like one and think like one now. So that when you move over and you get into that seat, yeah, it's going to be hard. It's going to be difficult. But your mind is already looking at things from a head coach's perspective. And obviously, you don't know what you don't know. But if you try to look at things that way, and my AD always says, you know, look at things from a 30,000 foot view. Don't just look at it as a slice of the pie. Look at the whole pie. And if I take this slice out, how does that impact that over there? How does that impact that over there? And look at it and try to control as many of the factors as you can to create the best possible scenario, and the best possible outcome for everybody. And looking at it that way, I think it gives guys that have come through here or guys that we've been in touch with, you know, a different perspective. And it's up to them to do what they do with that opportunity and that perspective.
Dave Smart is one of the best coaches in the world, and now you can learn from him with never before available access. 3 all-access practices and 1 defensive coaching clinic are available at davesmartbasketball.com. What makes these all-access practice and clinic videos so unique? Dave Smart has won 12 national championships and has a winning percentage of 92%. Dave Smart's Force Weak Hand defensive system is world-renowned and has never been shared in this way before. Dave Smart has a winning record in over 50 games versus NCAA Division I teams, having beaten Wichita State, Baylor, Wisconsin, and many others. Dave Smart is recognized by Jay Wright, Mick Cronin, Jay Triano, and many other top coaches in the world as one of the best minds in basketball. Learn from one of the greatest minds in the game who opened his doors and shared the game with us from one of the most successful basketball programs in the world. Go to davesmartbasketball.com now to learn more and to purchase all 4 videos.
Well, not surprisingly, hearing you talk this way about your assistant coaches, not surprisingly, something that you value is developing players. And sure, not just as people. Let's focus, because obviously you've talked about that, the importance of the character and the person. But let's talk about player development from a basketball standpoint. What are some of the things that you value and some of the things that you've found successful in terms of developing that? Because it's clear from just listening to you for this short time that that's important.
Yeah, it's very important. I think really, you know, before you try to develop something, you have to know what you have, what you're working with. So trying to spend time and identify strengths and weaknesses, and really, really getting guys to buy into that. Like, most guys don't want to acknowledge their weaknesses. And I try to explain to them, like, that's why we're a team. If you're a golfer and you're scared of your weaknesses, I get it. But we're a team built on strengths and weaknesses. So what you do well, we need that, and that's why you're here. What you don't do well, guess what? That guy sitting to your left or your right, that's probably what they do well. And together as a team, we can create what we're looking for. And so trying to get guys to understand that, A, this is what my strengths are, this is what my weaknesses are, and really play to those things. One of the guys that we just hired, Brandon Dunson, he shared this with me, and it stuck with me the last, last 2 weeks. He said that, you know, the difference between a rookie and a veteran in the NBA, a rookie is going to try to show you everything that they cannot do, and they're going to try to show you that they can do it. A veteran is going to realize this is what I do well, and I'm going to beat you with that. And so taking that analogy and getting freshmen to come in here who think, oh, I'm all world, I can do this and I can do that. Hey, man, no, you can't. No, you can't. That's one of the hardest parts, is trying to get them to understand that you can't do everything and be good at it. Piece it together. This is what you do well. Let's work on that. And not only work on it on the floor standpoint, but mentally, visually, seeing these things and then seeing how they play into the overall program, the overall team, how much impact they have on the team is uber important. From a statistical standpoint, getting guys to understand, hey, when you catch and shoot, you shoot almost 40%. When you one dribble into a shot, you probably shoot about 17%, and that's okay. Where the issue becomes is if you keep dribbling in, trying to shoot, and you're shooting 17%, you're killing our team. Versus if you just catch and shoot, you shoot 40% or higher. And so, you know, having those conversations continuously, and then every single day, Chris, like every day, we spend time trying to work on those things. Our practice is so funny. The last year, we had a veteran group, and so it allowed us to practice this way. But we spent an hour and a half on the floor, and I guarantee you probably 35 to 40 minutes of that was skill development. We had a routine of 20 minutes, straight 20 minutes, just catch and shoot. 20 minutes, catch and shoot. Now, statistically, we weren't very successful in catch and shooting threes, so understand where I'm coming from. But we spent 20 minutes just catching and shooting. And then we spent, you know, another 15 minutes a day or 10 minutes a day in ball screen reads. Where do I go when I'm in this position on the ball screen? If I have the ball, where do I go? If I don't have the ball, where do I go? The angles of a screen based on what the defense is doing to us. And so just trying to get guys to buy into those things, but then spend time doing those things and then go back and reflect, okay, on film. This is what we were trying to do. This is what it looked like. Let's grade ourselves. Let's talk about, did we do it? Did we do it consistently? Okay, now let's get better at it. And so literally not trying to do a whole bunch of things, but do some things really, really, really well.
Well, it's great. And it speaks to the game nowadays too, that the stats, the analysis that you have behind, which backs your words and just the importance of that. And I'm imagining that that directs a lot of what you do with your players in their individual workouts too. Can you talk a little bit about the phase out of season? Do you give them a little more leeway to develop their overall game in the off season more than you would in season when the focus is on team and obviously how they fit into the team with their role? Does the off season give them more chance to kind of dream to be better at something?
I think it is. I think this, I don't take credit for this phrase, but I think it's uber important is players are made in the summers. Players are made in the off season. Teams are made in the season. And we allow our guys, especially now we have a veteran group that they're willing to work. They're willing to put in the work. So I don't have to fight guys. Hey, get in the gym, drag guys in the gym. They're already there. So that was one of the hardest things was, you know, finding guys that are workers. Now we've identified and we have more workers in our program than we have non-workers. Not that we don't have them. They're there. But we have more workers in our program than we have non-workers. So now that we've established that, okay, now you're in the gym. What are you working on? What are you doing? Having those conversations. And then I encourage, as crazy as it sounds, and I don't know, I encourage our guys, hey, man, especially where we are, we're located in a very, very vast area for basketball. So like international guys come home or pro guys, they come home and they work out, they play. And so we have access to those things. And I encourage our guys, hey, go get with somebody that's not in our program. Go work out with them. Go see what they teach. Go learn about them. Go learn about your game based on what they're teaching you. So I ask our guys and say, I encourage them, hey, man, go work out with so-and-so. Cool. Now, when you come back, it might be a little bit of a different conversation, but I encourage them to go learn about themselves again so that they can continue to grow and develop. And as you and I know, anytime you give people ownership, anytime you give them the opportunity to feel like they're creating something, their investment is different. And so we try to encourage that, but it's a very, very vital part of the overall growth and development of our team and our program is what each individual does. Right now in the offseason, we've hired two new guys. As you know, we're spending time breaking down our guys via film statistically. And we're going to put together a booklet when they come back for summer school, breaking down their strengths, their weaknesses, areas that they got to get better, and then how we're going to address those things. One of the big issues for our ball club right now is we turn the ball over way too much. I mean, we've got two or three guys that handle the ball a lot, and they're averaging two turnovers a game, which is crazy. And so we need to address those things and how we're going to address it, you know, over an 8-week course of time together, being on the floor. Those are the things that I think we dive into and really, really illuminate those things. So the guys know when I walk on the court, this is what I'm working on. This is what I'm doing. We try to be as fundamentally sound as possible. And people always say that again, as coaches speak. But what does that mean? For us, fundamentals mean how good are your feet? How consistent are your feet on every catch and shoot? You know, some things that we've stolen from you in terms of we don't necessarily allow a lot of times of our guys just being able to shoot the same shot over and over and over and over and over again, because throughout the course of a game, you don't get those things. So changing up some of the way that we train, I think has really played into our guys' ability to continue to grow and develop and get better. But literally, I think you're only as good as your individual. As good as your individual understands the game, as good as your individual understands their own game and willing to apply their strengths to the game helps everybody get better.
Well, first of all, it's a great segue to the next part, but it all starts from the feet. I couldn't agree more, Coach. It all starts from the feet. And again, however you phrase and however you bring it together, it's the case. But let's talk about James Harden, because is there anyone better in the world with their feet than James Harden? And he's someone that you've helped recruit, you've helped coach, and you have a relationship with. And how much of his game and who he's become has influenced kind of what your approach to basketball is, if any, at this point?
You know, I think my time with James taught me a lot as an assistant coach, and watching him evolve and become the player that he is, I'm still learning from him. And I use what he does best in recruiting with our guys. And I think the number one thing that James Harden does best is he constantly seeks and makes the right basketball play, the right basketball decision. So, you know, whether he's in a ball screen, whether he's in an isolation situation, he scores a lot, and everybody gets enamored with his scoring and his ability to shoot the three. And he didn't always shoot the ball that well. That's something that he's created, you know, a work habit for and an appetite for, and he's gobbling it up. But the thing he consistently does is he makes the right basketball decision. And sometimes that's scoring at the rim. Sometimes that's step back. Sometimes that's, you know, the different array of moves that he uses for himself to create opportunities to score. But he's constantly seeking, getting two on the basketball. If he can get two on the ball, he's going to find the help. Sometimes it's to Capella at the corner of the board. Sometimes it's to Capella at the front of the rim. You know, other times it's pitching out to Eric Gordon. Other times it's you know, continuing his dribble to find the right basketball play. And he does that over consistently over the course of time. And that's something that we've continued to encourage our guys and continue to encourage our players, because you don't necessarily put them in a box. You boil it down to decision-making. Put your talent in the box. Put your decision-making in the box. And it doesn't say you have to just do this. It says you have to create and seek the right basketball play. And again, sometimes that's make the extra pass. You might have a good shot, but pass it up for a great shot. Those types of things, that's James's influence on me. And being able to see him out on the floor with the ball in his hand so much and dominated and score. But more importantly, you know, I think he passes the ball exceptionally well. Like, and I say this in recruiting sometimes, and even with our guys, like FedEx and UPS, those guys are really good at delivering your packages, right? Like, they do a really good job of getting it where you want it. I think they pale in comparison to the way that James Harden delivers the basketball. You could have your eyes closed and hold your hand somewhere, and he's going to put that ball right there, and all you got to do is catch and shoot it, catch and score it. And I think that's an underrated skill set that not a lot of people recognize for him, his growth, and making him the player that he is. But at our level, to me, it's the biggest difference between winning and losing. If I pass a guy open or I pass a guy into an open shot, I get an assist, he gets 2 points, we got a good chance of winning if we can consistently repeat that process.
Well, you know, you're speaking my language, because I could not agree more that, you know, we get fascinated by, you know, the step back or, you know, the shot or whatever it may be. But again, his brilliance, like so many great players, is their perceptual ability to just see things before other people see them and then execute the decision. And it's just tremendous watching him, and, you know, how cool it must be just to have seen him from early stages and seen his development like that, truly. So it's so impressive.
Yeah, no, it's been fascinating, you know, because I very rarely talk about it in recruiting. Like, our staff will bring it up and then I'll say something about it, but I never really bring it up because I'm super biased. Obviously, I get defensive if you start talking about my guy sometimes. So I have to, you know, I have to be a little bit cautious when that comes up, because, you know, everybody has their opinion and they're entitled to it. But in the same token, I'm entitled to mine, and I'm going to protect my guy and defend him. Sometimes even if he's wrong, I don't care. It's my guy, you know?
Well, as he should be. And he's a lot of people's guy too. So that's sure. Not an issue when you're talking about that. Just incredible talent. But coach, another thing that I saw you say something about this, and I love the topic, and it brings home a lot for coaches too. And that's another generalization that people make. Oh, this generation doesn't do this, or, and we used to do this. And you can't really generalize generations. For example, going to play pickup. Well, you know what? We've changed the rules as adults for kids. Yeah. They don't play pickup because everything's organized, first of all. But the other part is, it's not safe. We don't let our kids just at a young age just walk to the park and play. Yeah. And you've got young kids, you're just like, I don't let my kids walk to the park on their own to play pickup all day. That's just the thing. So there's all these things you can't generalize. And this generation, this millennial generation, you've talked about that. I read about an article, some things that you said. So can you talk about, well, how is it different talking to this group of this generation of athletes?
I think it's a ton different because of their environment. They have access to so much more information so much quicker than we ever even thought about creating and coming up with, they have it. They, like, before you can get a full sentence out, they can pull it up on their phone and they know more than you know before you even say anything. And so I think it's imperative that we, A, understand that and grasp that, but then be willing to adapt to that with our approach. You know, as far as the teachers, they still want to learn. They still want to know what we know, but they want to know it differently. And so I think the most important part when you're dealing with the millennials is their attention. Realizing you have to captivate it and captivate it quick, and then you're not going to be able to keep it very, very long. So gone are the days, in my opinion, where you can sit in a film room with a team or a group of guys and get after it in film for an hour, for 2 hours. Some guys do that. But I guarantee you, if you ask those kids, they'll tell you, I can figure it out in 15, 20 minutes. Now, it might not be to the level that we want, but a little is better than none. If you sit in a film room, in my opinion, more than 45 minutes, an hour, and I've done that before because I'm either excited or really, really disgruntled with my group, they're gone. And so I think, you know, grasping and getting their attention, but then maintaining it, and then knowing when you're losing it and making an adjustment because you're losing it, whether that means, hey, you're in a film room, get up, stand up, turn the lights on, change seats, okay, sit back down. Or if you're in a drill and the drill's just dragging, 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 get out of the drill and maybe come back to it. But I think just being aware of how they learn and the fact that they come to the table with more stuff on their mind than anything. And more times than not, it's not basketball stuff. It's my girlfriend did this, or my boyfriend did this, or you know, I'm upset because this person didn't Snapchat me back, or this person didn't like my Instagram. And it really, really affects them. And so being able to say, hey, it's okay, let's work through that. Let's change your focus on this, and then we'll come back to that. I think it's a big part of dealing with these young kids that we're dealing with nowadays, and not generalizing and not shooing them away because they're different than us. That's what makes our world what it is. Everybody's unique. Everybody's different. And so understanding that, appreciating that, and then playing into that and investing into that, you know, different ways, I think is important for you to be able to connect with this younger generation.
Well, again, there's no point in complaining about it because, and again, I think the other part is that we think that they need to change. But, yeah. But it's us. We need to change. Because as you said, we need to understand them. And it's not bad. Like what they're going through is not bad. And I think sometimes we frame change as bad. But what it's actually probably helped me become a better leader and a better person in a lot of ways because they've challenged me in ways that I wasn't challenged before.
Definitely. And you use the word changed with an ED at the end. You know, these kids, they haven't changed. They're growing. They don't even have the capacity to change because they are what they are. The people that have the capacity to change is us as adults. And you hit the nail on the head. It's different because of the way society has grown. Kids aren't allowed to go play just freely and go to the park and go do these things. So what happens as a parent? I want to protect my kid. I don't let them do some of the things because of the circumstances. So I'm trying to protect them from certain things. I've changed. They only know what they know. I know what I know, and I know how to, you know, manipulate the factors and change the environment to keep them safe or to keep them protected or to keep them isolated so they're only working on this or they're only working on that. We are the people that have changed. We allow these kids to get away with certain things because we say, oh, you're not like us, forget you. No, you're not like us, but I understand that. I appreciate it. I receive it. Now, here's what I think we should do because of it. I think that's a huge, huge transition. And I think if you go back and look at, there's Frank Martin, who had a big press conference and he focused on the fact that us as parents, us as adults, us as coaches, we've changed because we know the outcome that we're trying to achieve. They don't. They only know what we let them do. So if you let your kid switch from this AAU team to that AAU team to that AAU team, the kid is only doing what you allow them to do. And it's up to us. It's incumbent upon us to once again be self-aware of what is the desired outcome. What is their desired outcome? And how do we merge those two things to get what it is that we're trying to get from an individual standpoint and then obviously from a collective standpoint? Sorry, that was a soapbox.
Oh, I loved it. Because I couldn't agree more. And again, that's kind of what I was trying to shape for people, because I guess it's just a personal frustration that I've seen a lot lately. And the other one, like you said, they don't know what they don't know. That applies to coaches too.
Yeah.
Because obviously I'm in this space where, you know, I'm somewhat challenging some traditional norms in coaching. But like people sometimes get frustrated to me about other coaches not knowing some of this stuff. And I'm kind of like, well, they don't know what they don't know. Like it's not, again, it's not their fault. They just don't know it yet.
Yeah.
But when you show people or when you expose them to different things, just like this generation of athletes, then, hey, the buy-in or the interest or the intrigue becomes much easier. So, yeah, no, it's not a bad thing at all. Coach, let's get quickly, just as we wind this down, style of play. How much, because we've heard a lot about the character, the emphasis on player development. How does this all circle around back to style of play and how you decide to play with your team? Because clearly you've got a great foundation here. And then does this all influence the style of play that you've chosen?
I think it does, because with our style of play, there's a lot of freedom. And sometimes that freedom is a detriment because, again, the decision-making, the character of having the opportunity to choose, okay, if I do this, then this happens. If I do that, then this happens. I think there's a lot of leeway and a lot of freedom that sometimes can be, like I said, to our detriment. But I think if using that freedom and that decision-making ability, if you use it in the right way and you use it consistently, I think over the course of time, you have an opportunity to have success. And so system is very, very defensive driven. I want to play as fast as I can play well. And so we try to get guys to buy into, in order to play fast, you got to rebound it. Can't be taking it out of the net. And there are some people who say you can play fast, taking it out of the net. To me, I disagree. If you get scored on, I'm going to try to see if I can walk the ball up the floor to piss you off. Because all these guys want to say they want to play fast, they want to play fast, they want to play fast. But you have to play organized to play fast. And so we try to emphasize our defense, creating a lot of our offense, and try to play in transition a lot. We believe in spacing. And again, our system is a small adaptation of what the professional teams do, because all these guys come and they think they're going to play pro, or they think they are a pro. And so, okay, that's fine. This is what pros do. When they're shooting by themselves, they don't miss more than 8 of 10 shots. That's what a pro does. So if you want to be a pro, then that's what you have to do. And those shots are going to come from these spots right here within the confines of our offense. Our system is a replication of the NBA as far as middle ball screens and trying to read where the help is coming from, if they're going to get two on the ball. But we really believe in spacing and ball movement and allowing the ball to try to find the open shot. And so, again, like I said, there's a lot of freedom in there. But I think also it's a little bit harder for a team to defend us, because different guys are doing different things and making different decisions with different abilities. Some guys can catch and shoot. Some guys are really good getting downhill. Some guys are a good combination of both. And so trying to recruit to that and then allowing guys to understand, we're literally allowing you to come here and paint your own picture. If you're a catch and shoot guy, then there's room in our program, room in our spacing, room in our system that allows you to be highlighted as a catch-and-shoot guy. If you're a get-downhill guy, there's room in our system that allows you to do that. If you're a post-up guy, because of the spacing, you should be able to have a lot of one-on-one opportunities. And if they double you, then okay, here we go once again with that decision-making piece. So that, in a nutshell, is our system. That's the way I believe in playing. There are some things I want to tweak, some things I'd like to incorporate and maybe do different, but we're not quite there yet. But it's all centered around 4-round-1, space the floor, let's get downhill and get two on the ball and then go play.
Well, Coach, I know I've been fortunate. I've had a small peek into what you do. I had a chance to watch you guys practice. I've had a chance to talk to you. And even following you on Instagram, I mean, just the fact that you share some family stuff and, you know, you're obviously a loving father and loving husband and all those other things that I know we're opening some minds and other coaches that haven't had a chance to get to know you yet. I hope they do, because tremendous. And, you know, I just thank you a lot for taking some time and sharing all that you shared today.
Definitely. Well, I appreciate you allowing me to get on, and I want the listeners to hear this and hear how important it is, you know, based on our relationship, how we met. You created change in me. I was open to it. I was desiring it. And little did I know that you and your system and the way you think would have a huge impact on how we develop guys, how we do things. And again, it's all about growth and development. And so, you know, I want to continue to develop this relationship, but also want people to invest. And no, not all of it is for them. But even if you expose yourself to it, you learn about it and you see somebody else doing it, you may be able to defend it or use it in some way, shape, form, or fashion. So I'm super grateful that you've allowed me to witness some of the things that you do and pick your brain on some of the things that you do and why you do them and how important they are to you. And then being a part of watching us and sharing your thoughts with us as well has been very, very beneficial to myself as an individual. And obviously it's played a huge part on our program. And so super humbled and grateful for this opportunity to join you on your podcast. And I hope people continue to listen and buy into it and pick and choose what they think is important for them to be successful, because there's a lot of information here, not in my podcast, but in the other ones that you've previously done.
Well, thank you for that, Coach. That's wonderful. And a little bit of breaking news for most people here, but I'm actually moving to California, Coach. So you're going to see more of me.
Awesome.
Moving to Palm Desert, and awesome. You know, it's about 2 hours away. So I have definitely plans that I'm going to come visit you and spend some more time there as well. So, and I'm sure you'll get reached out by a number of people now that didn't know you or want to come see you. And obviously me and California people will get a lot want to come definitely. See you there too. So it's going to be great. Thanks.
My doors are always well. Okay. Thank you.
Basketball immersion is one-stop shopping for video learning to stimulate your basketball coaching using evidence-based practices. Watch hundreds of videos covering BDT shooting, zero-second skill training, how we teach using small-sided games and a games approach to coaching, as well as team concepts and systems like trail trap, flow offense, two-sided fast break, and much, much more. NCAA, NBA, pro, high school, and youth coaches are amongst the thousands of coaches who are a part of our community. Go to basketballimmersion.com today to stimulate your basketball coaching.
To find out more about Coach and all we spoke about today, please take a look at the show notes for today's episode. I love to share the game and have basketball coaching conversations, so connect with me on social media. You can find all my social media information and all your membership, clinic, and consulting needs at basketballimmersion.com. That concludes today's episode. I know there are so many podcasts out there. Thank you for taking the time to listen to the Basketball Podcast with me, your host, Chris Oliver. Please subscribe and share the podcast with your friends and colleagues so that we can keep bringing you the best of what's out there and share the game.